Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Thursday, June 9th, 2022. I'm your reader, Seth Anderson. Our first story of the day. Hall, Keith, top county primary. Democrats face GOP's Trelka Halverson for two supervisor spots on November 8th. By Maria Kuiper, Dateline Waterloo. Democrats competing for the Black Hawk County Board of Supervisors in the November 8th general election will not include a 16-year veteran. Tavis Hall and Glenn Keith were the top two vote-getters in Tuesday's Democratic primary election, according to unofficial results. They beat out incumbent Craig White to be on the ballot in the general election. Current supervisors White and Dan Trelka are up for re-election, meaning two seats are open. Three Democrats and two Republicans were on the primary ballot. Both Republican candidates, Dan Trelka and Dennis Halverson, will automatically advance to the general election. Unofficial results from the Black Hawk County Auditor's Office say Hall received 4,656 votes, or 43.02%. Keith received 3,144 votes, or 29.05%. And White received 3,010 votes, or 27.81%. There were 13 Democratic write-in votes. In the Republican primary, Dennis Halverson received 2,717 votes, or 41.35%, and Dan Trelka received 3,825, or 58.21%. There were 29 Republican write-in votes. Hall, age 37, said he's honored to receive the most votes and believes it's due to his role in the community. "Folks understand pride in community is what drives my service and engagement in my community," said Hall, Experience Waterloo's executive director. "I think folks responded well to that, and they recognize that it's time. It's time to have elected leadership that reflects values of our community, and folks are proud to be from here." Hall also said he will work with Keith to get the two Democrats over the finish line in the general election. Keith, age 47, a combat veteran and teacher at East High School, said he's honored and grateful for all the people who voted for him because residents practice their right to vote, something he said he has spent his entire life defending. "I look forward to continuing this campaign and meeting all of our great citizens, and I want to serve them," Keith said. "I want to put their own needs before my own. My strategy now is to knock on more doors and listen to citizens' concerns and to bring their voices to the table, because I want to represent everyone on the Board of Supervisors." Keith also included White in his remarks, noting that White served the nation and the community, and he appreciates his service to those causes. The primary's voter turnout was 13.48% of all registered voters in Black Hawk County, with 20.51% of Democrats and 21.47% of Republicans participating. Other county-level candidates were uncontested in their party and currently have no opponents. All will advance to the general election. Republican Linda Hintzman, a political newcomer, received 4,092 votes in her primary, plus another 16 write-in votes. There were also 183 write-in votes for county recorder and 152 for county attorney in the Republican primary. Incumbent Democrats Sandy L. Smith, county recorder, and Brian J. Williams, county attorney, received 6,069 votes and 6,087 votes, respectively, in their primary. There were also 10 write-in votes for recorder and 20 for county attorney. In addition, 318 write-in votes were cast for treasurer in the Democratic primary. Our next story, U.S. Senate fight begins. Grassley favored, but Dems say he's been there too long, by Aaron Murphy, Dateline Des Moines. They are the names Iowans will hear over and over for the next 5 months, the faces that will be seen on every screen that gets Iowans' eyes. Chuck Grassley, Mike Franken. The matchup is set. Iowa's 2022 U.S. Senate general election campaign started Wednesday, the day after Franken, a U.S. Navy veteran from Sioux City, handily won the Democratic primary, and Grassley, Iowa's longtime Republican U.S. Senator, staved off a primary challenge of his own. According to unofficial primary election results, Grassley had 143,289 votes to state legislator Jim Carlin's 51,755. On the Democratic side, Franken received 86,372 votes. Former U.S. Representative Abby Finkenauer and Dr. Glenn Hurst, his competitors, garnered 62,498 and 7,562 votes, respectively. The focus is now entirely on Grassley and Franken, and the countdown to the November 8th general election has started. The 88-year-old Grassley will enter the campaign as the favorite. His six re-election campaign victories have come by a staggering average of 35 percentage points. Three prominent national political forecasters, Sabato's Crystal Ball, the Cook Political Report, and Inside Elections, all project in their strongest classification that Grassley will win another six-year term. Some of the themes that Iowans can expect to hear over the next 5 months have already emerged. Grassley and Republicans will seek to tie Franken to Democratic President Joe Biden. The Republican Party of Iowa has already called Franken a, quote, Biden apologist, unquote, and the Grassley campaign called Franken, quote, another yes man for Biden's radical liberal policies. The strategy makes political sense because of Biden's poor approval numbers nationally, including in Iowa. Just 35% of Iowans approve of Biden's performance as president, while 59% disapprove, according to the most recent Des Moines Register MediaCom Iowa poll from early March. In regard to all these things that I hear from people at local events in Iowa being mad at, the Biden administration, inflation, gas prices, border, I have heard Franken say that he's with the president on, Grassley told Iowa reporters Wednesday. Franken and Democrats will claim Grassley has been in Congress for too long and that he has grown out of touch with Iowa voters. They will criticize his role in the recent appointments of conservative justices to the U.S. Supreme Court, which could soon spell the end to protections against abortion bans, and allege his response to the January 6, 2021 attacks on the U.S. Capitol have been insufficient. I think past performance is an exhibit for future achievements. And as you look at Grassley's past performance, certainly in the last 20 years, there is a gulf of high-order achievements, Franken told reporters Tuesday night after his primary election victory. Certainly, Grassley has given us the most partisan Supreme Court in all of our lives. He has voted down a series of measures that would have saved people's lives from a responsible ownership of firearms perspective. He has not been a responsible individual in supporting antitrust legislation. Grassley also enters the general election campaign in a stronger position financially. As of May 18th, the most recent date at which federal campaign fundraising figures are available, Grassley had more than $4.3 million in his campaign account. Franken, who raised nearly $3 million during the primary campaign but had to spend much of it to win the competitive race, had just $253,000 as of May 18th. Surely some outside groups will put resources into the campaign as well, but that activity may start out slowly as national parties and interest groups invest more in races across the country that are believed to be more competitive. Our next story, Hoffman tops Bremer in treasurer's race. Waverly mayor wins Republican primary, by Andy Malone. Dateline Waverly. Adam Hoffman, Waverly's mayor, secured Republican voters' endorsement in a two-person race for Bremer County Treasurer, according to unofficial results in Tuesday's primary election. Hoffman, also an advanced funeral planner with Abel's Funeral and Cremation Service in Grundy Center, received 889 votes, or 53.55%. Challenger Angie Burrows, age 60, who is a 21-year employee of the treasurer's office, who currently serves as the deputy treasurer in charge of motor vehicles, tallied 771, or 46.45% of the vote. Hoffman, age 41, will be the Republican candidate on the November 8th general election ballot. I'm feeling good. It's always nice to see the turnout and support. It wasn't a landslide by any means, but it was good to see a lot of people interested in the race rather than just a few, Hoffman said Tuesday. A total of 1,663 votes were cast for the candidates seeking the four-year term of an office offering motor vehicle, driver's license, and property tax services. Three of them were write-in votes. No Democrats have filed to run. The longtime treasurer, Sue Shonka, is retiring at the end of the year. Hoffman credited his engagement with the public before and during the campaign for his success, and he said he doesn't plan to fall off the face of the earth with no challenger in sight for the general election. Hoffman heard often on the campaign trail about the frustration people have with the appointment process for driver's licenses. I'll look at the possible benefits and pitfalls with customers and staff, and we will see what's right, whether it be walk-ins or some combination, he said. I look forward to being on the November 8th ballot and hope to start serving January 7th, he added. The filing deadline of minority party and independent candidates is August 31st. If ultimately elected as treasurer in November, Hoffman still intends to run for re-election in 2023 at the end of his second mayoral term. The other races in Bremer County were uncontested. Republican Corey Kerwinski received 486 votes in the Supervisor District 2 race. In Supervisor District 3, 614 votes were cast for Dewey Hildebrandt, the Republican incumbent. District 2 incumbent Timothy Neal has filed for District 3 because of redistricting. He's an independent and wasn't on the primary ballot. Missy Thurm secured 1,564 votes as the Republican incumbent for county recorder. The county attorney race included Republican Darius Robinson, who received 1,494 votes. Democrat Jill Dashner tallied 922 votes. Next story, Bertie CF's top choice for public safety job. Panel suggests making acting title permanent, by Andy Malone, Dateline Cedar Falls. A committee led by City Administrator Ron Gaines and Mayor Rob Green is recommending a longtime employee be named the permanent replacement for retired Public Safety Director Jeff Olson, the city announced Wednesday. The City Council likely will vote June 20 on the hiring of Craig Bertie, who has an extensive resume within Cedar Falls public safety sector dating back to 1991. Acting Police Chief Mark Howard and Lynn Al Fear Jr., a retired veteran of the Cedar Rapids Police Department, were the two other candidates considered finalists. All three were interviewed May 25th. Seven applied for the job. In Cedar Falls, Bertie has served as a police officer, sergeant, lieutenant, captain, assistant director slash assistant police chief, and police chief. And he has been serving as the interim director since Olson's last day, March 11th. Bertie is a graduate of the University of Northern Iowa and holds a Bachelor of Arts in Criminology. The Public Safety Director Selection Committee was made up of Green, Gaines, Mayor Pro Tem Simon Harding, Administration Committee Chair Kelly Dunn, and the City Department Directors. Green previously said he could have overridden the recommendation of the City Administrator and Committee if he had another candidate in mind, but noted that it is unlikely because of that person working closely with the administrator. The city will continue to provide updates to the community as the selection process moves forward. Our next story from the Cedar Valley section is on the Fantastics. Try to remember to snag tickets for CFCT's Timeless production, by Melody Parker, Dateline Cedar Falls. It's hard to forget Try to Remember from the world's longest-running theater production, The Fantastics. The poetic song is steeped in nostalgia for youth and lost innocence as it inspires the imagination and conjures memory of one's life. Longtime theater veteran Leanne Nichols, who is directing the Cedar Falls Community Theater show opening Friday at the Oster Regent Theater, believes the song pulls it all together. One line is full of wisdom. Without a hurt, the heart is hollow. One point in the play is that, yes, you're young and dreaming of what your life will be, but you will come up against things you have to deal with, and at the end of life, those experiences make us mellow. We come to a better understanding of what life is, she explained. Performances are at 7:30 p.m. Friday and Saturday, and June 17 and 18. Matinees are at 2 p.m. Sunday and June 19th. At its heart, The Fantastics is a funny, romantic, and allegorical story infused with magic, moonlight, and love. Broadly based on the late 19th century play by Edmund Rostand, The composer is Harvey Schmidt, with lyrics by Tom Jones. Since its opening in May 1960 at the Sullivan Street Playhouse in New York and its revival at the Jerry Orbach Theater, audiences have fallen for the musical. The original production ran 42 years until 2002 and 17,162 performances. The revival ran off-Broadway from 2006 to 2017. Two fathers, played by Gary Bum Baumgartner and Gary Goot, are feuding. However, it's a ruse to make their children, Louisa, played by Crystal Spencer, and Matt, played by Aiden Smith, fall for each other. El Gallo, played by Gary Kroger, is the narrator. The stage set is deliberately bare bones. It's presented simply because it's about the illusion of theatrics. The backstage will be totally revealed. The audience see the actors putting on costumes, people carrying props around, and everyone preparing for the play to begin, Nichols said. We're presenting it as theatrically as we can, so the characters, the story, and the music are what people remember. The small cast also includes Grant Tracy, Dennis Downs, and Kim Groninga. Musicians are Seth Jordan Butler on piano and Sam Stover on bass. Nichols praised Butler for his vocal direction, guiding the wonderful voices in the show. Aiden and Crystal are charming, and their voices blend beautifully together. Music is woven throughout the dialogue, and there are so many different genres of music. The script has been updated to better reflect the sensibilities of modern audiences without altering the story or the catchy songs, Nichols said. Ultimately, The Fantastics continues to have timeless, universal appeal. There is a lot of truth in it. It is about the illusions people have as they live their lives before finally learning the reality behind the illusions. All of it makes for a deeper understanding of humanity, Nichols added. Tickets are $30 for adults and $10 for students. They can be purchased at the box office Monday through Friday from 1 to 4 p.m. or before the show, online at www.mycfct.org or by calling 319-277-5283. Our next story is Man Pleads in Fatal Shooting. Doree Cooper Pleads Guilty to Manslaughter in Second Cousin's Death, by Jeff Reinitz, Dateline Waterloo. With cuffed hands and teardrop tattoos on his right cheek, Doree Darnell Cooper dabbed away real tears Wednesday as he pleaded guilty to shooting his second cousin. "It happened, and I can't take it back. I wish I could," Doree Cooper, age 58, told the court, his voice barely audible. He said he hopes family will forgive him. "Words can't say enough," he said. Doree Cooper had been charged with first-degree murder for shooting LaVance Lamar Cooper at his apartment on West 2nd Street on March 22nd. On Wednesday, he pleaded guilty under a deal that lowered the charge to voluntary manslaughter. He also pleaded to a charge of felon in possession of a firearm for having the handgun he used the shooting. Because of prior felony convictions, second-degree robbery in Webster County, and homicide by vehicle for a 2006 drunken driving crash in Waterloo, the manslaughter sentence was enhanced to 15 years in prison. This was added to 5 years for the firearm charge for a total of 20 years behind bars. And because of the timing of his prior convictions, Doree Cooper will have to serve at least 10 years before he is eligible for parole, said Blackhawk County Attorney Brian Williams. Doree Cooper's attorneys had indicated they plan to argue self-defense if the matter went to trial, and Williams said the possible justification defense and the uncertainty of the outcome of a trial weighed into the state's decision to agree to the lesser manslaughter charge. Doree Cooper's health, he walks with the assistance of a cane, and his reported heart and other ailments, and the sentencing enhancements available also factored into the decision, Williams said. The charge indicates Doree Cooper acted with a sudden, violent, irresistible passion in response to a serious provocation. Details of the slaying weren't available. Prosecutors said the two had been drinking and were involved in an altercation, but they said it didn't stem from a $40 debt, as relatives had earlier indicated. Next story, Eluding Charge Dropped in Trooper's Death, by Jeff Reinitz, Dateline Grundy Center. Prosecutors have dropped minor charges against a Grundy Center man who was convicted of killing a state trooper in 2021 standoff at his home. Michael Thomas Lang, age 42, had been charged with eluding for fleeing through town from a speeding stop, which ultimately led to the fatal standoff. The chase and shooting charges were set for separate trials. In May, a jury found Lang guilty of first-degree murder, attempted murder, and assault on an officer for killing Sergeant Jim Smith, shooting at a SWAT team armored vehicle driver, and struggling with a Grundy Center police officer. The murder charge carries mandatory life in prison without parole, and sentencing will be later this month. Following the murder verdict, the Grundy County Attorney's Office asked the court to dismiss the eluding charge, a misdemeanor with a 2-year maximum, in the interest of justice. In the request, prosecutors noted the impending life sentence Lang faces. A judge dismissed the eluding charge in a ruling filed last week. Also dismissed was a misdemeanor charge for failing to have an ignition interlock device, a breath test required because of his restricted driver's license status, in his pickup truck during the chase and 3 speeding tickets from the pursuit. Meanwhile, Lang's attorneys have requested a new trial on the murder charge. They argue the jury should have been given a self-defense instruction and allege there wasn't enough evidence that he acted with premeditation, had the specific intent to kill, or acted with malice aforethought. A hearing on the request is scheduled for the same day as sentencing. Prosecutors allege Lang refused to pull over for a speeding stop in town on April 9, 2021. They say he led the city police officer into the country, where the two struggled and he knocked away the officer's taser. He fled home when a passerby intervened and a sheriff's deputy pulled up. When officers arrived at Lang's home, he wouldn't come to the door, prompting state troopers to enter the home. Lang shot Smith in the chest with a shotgun slug and fired a second slug into his leg while he was on the ground. Lang was shot and injured when Iowa State Patrol tactical team members breached the home with a Bearcat armored vehicle. At trial, Lang's attorneys said he simply reacted when he fired the shotgun and didn't have time to consider the situation. We have several more stories on the primary election results from this Tuesday. The first one, Thompson wins GOP contest in District 58 by Andy Malone. A lawyer and businessman beat 2 other Republican challengers vying for the House District 58 nomination in Tuesday's primary election. Charlie Thompson, age 62, of Charles City, tallied 1,140 votes, or 55.21%. Jim Wright, age 62, a retired school band director and technology coordinator from Sumner, got 616 votes, or 29.83% of the total. And Sean Gallagher, age 64, of Fairbank, a manufacturing business management and finance retiree, tallied 309 votes, or 14.96%. Iowa House District 58 covers Chickasaw County and parts of Bremer and Floyd counties. Thompson received a majority of votes cast in each county, about 57% of 806 in Chickasaw, more than 55% of 708 in Floyd, and over 52% of 551 in Bremer. Redistricting created an open seat that was held formerly by first-term Republican Stephen Bradley. No Democrats have filed a run for the seat. "I'm ready for a bit of rest, but I'm very grateful," Thompson said Tuesday night. "It was a lot of work, but a lot of fun. And I'm grateful to have met all the people of the district. I'm very grateful to the voters and to my opponents. They're great gentlemen," he said. It was a policy-driven race that left voters with clear choices. He felt his success came down to his pro-life and school choice stances. Along the campaign trail, he learned that one of his main jobs as a state representative will be protecting Iowans from poorly constructed federal policy. "I observed that people are very frustrated that Iowa is being treated as an afterthought in national policy," he said. "We're being ruled by policy coming out of Washington." Despite having no opponent in November, he committed to continuing to knock on doors because he wants to be capable of fully representing all the people in his district, no matter their political affiliation. The next story, Meggers wins GOP spot in Iowa House District 54 by Maria Kuiper. Joshua Meggers came out on top in Tuesday's Republican primary for Iowa House District 54, and at this point is the only candidate for the seat on the November 8th general election. the 42-year-old Iowa State Patrol Sergeant from Grundy Center beat out Robert Nazario, age 58. Nazario is a retired merchant marine from Iowa Falls. Magers received 1,736 votes, or 57.14% of the total cast, compared with 1,296 for Nazario, according to unofficial results. There were six write-in votes. The House District encompasses all of Hardin and Grundy counties and stretches into the western edge of Blackhawk County. Magers came out ahead in two of the three counties, receiving nearly 66% of the 1,410 votes in Grundy and more than 71% of the 190 votes in Blackhawk. Nazario received just over 53% of the 1,434 votes cast in Hardin County. Magers said he's looking forward to the general election. "People supported me because of my level of engagement with the voters and getting out and learning the local issues and common sense approach," she said. "There's still a lot of campaigning yet and getting to know the people of Hardin, Grundy, and Blackhawk County and our communities." He also thanked Nazario for running a robust campaign, saying the competition made him a better candidate. "There are currently no Democrats running in House District 54. Under Iowa law, political parties with a vacancy may hold a convention to nominate a candidate." Next, we have a brief roundup of uncontested races in Blackhawk and Bremer counties. A number of candidates in Northeast Iowa State Senate and House districts had no competition in Tuesday's primary election, and many of those don't yet have a competitor in the November 8th general election. Here is a rundown of vote totals for such seats on the ballot in Blackhawk, Bremer, Buchanan, Butler, and Grundy counties. Republicans and Democrats, as well as write-in votes in their respective primaries, are identified by R and D. In House District 57, Pat Grassley, Republican, with 2,241 votes. In House District 61, Timmy Brown Powers, Democrat, 1,549 votes. House District 62, Jerome Amos Jr., Democrat, with 1,280 votes. House District 67, Craig Johnson, Republican, with 1,727 votes. House District 68, Chad Ingalls, Republican, with 1,614 votes. House District 75, Bob Kressig, Democrat, with 1,900 votes. Senate District 27, Annette Sweeney, Republican, with 4,840 votes. Senate District 29, Sandy Salmon, Republican, with 4,189 votes. And finally, Senate District 31, Bill Dotzler, Democrat, with 2,831 votes. And next, we have a story on a competitive Republican primary. Wolf beats Chavez in Iowa House District 76 Republican primary by Maria Kuiper. Republicans decided on Derek Wolf to represent Iowa House District 76 in Tuesday's primary election. Wolf ran against Tony Chavez to get a spot on the November 8th general election ballot. Wolf, a 40-year-old farmer out of Hudson, received 1,303 votes, or 69.23% of the total. Chavez, a 26-year-old independent contractor out of Cedar Falls, received 575 votes. There were four write-in candidates for the Republicans and two for the Democrats. The House District covers portions of Tama, Benton, and Blackhawk counties. It spans an area from just south of Dysart to the southern part of Cedar Falls. Wolf won a majority of votes in all three counties, 64% of the 1,257 votes in Blackhawk, 81% of the 558 in Tama, and nearly 66% of 67 votes cast in Benton. Wolf said the election process so far has been an honorable experience and has kept small-town life at the front of his campaign. "I think that rural America and this district has spoken about the important issues to them," Wolf said. "I think our next step is to continue to communicate the important issues that hit home for District 76. Those are the issues of small communities and keeping those areas strong." Wolf will face off against Kate Wyatt, a Hudson City Councilor, in November. Wyatt received 1,368 votes in the Democratic primary. You are listening to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Thursday, June 9th, 2022, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. Terry Lee Van Sickle, March 14, 1950 to November 17, 2021. Terry Lee Van Sickle, age 71, died on November 17, 2021 of complications from Parkinson's disease in Colorado Springs, Colorado. He was born on March 14, 1950 in Norfolk, Virginia to Robert Earl and Madeline Louise Berner Van Sickle. He graduated in 1968 from West Waterloo High. He entered the U.S. Army after high school. He was a helicopter crew chief and spent two tours of duty in Vietnam, where he was exposed to Agent Orange. Terry was honorably discharged while stationed in Colorado Springs, where he made his home. He was then hired as an electrical apprentice and became a proud union electrician until he retired. He married Margaret Harrison in 1972. They were later divorced. He is survived by his daughter Jennifer Ford, two grandchildren, Olivia and Luke, all of Austin, Texas, brother Earl of Cedar Falls with wife Judy, nephews Eric of Cedar Falls and Scott of Waterloo, preceded in death by his parents and brother Robert. Military rites will be held June 13th at 2 p.m. at the Pikes Peak Veterans Cemetery in Colorado Springs, Colorado. Lois J. Rath, June 20th, 1958 through June 6th, 2022. Lois J. Rath, age 63, of Dunkerton, Iowa, passed away on Monday, June 6th, 2022 at her home in rural Dunkerton. Lois Jean Rath was born on June 20th, 1958, the daughter of Bert and Ruby Wilkin Canfield in Waterloo. She grew up on a farm near Dunkerton. At the age of 11, she was baptized at First Baptist Church in Dunkerton. She graduated from Dunkerton High School in 1976. She was employed at John Deere and at Allen Hospital. She graduated Hawkeye Institute of Technology in 1980. On July 22, 1978, she was united in marriage to Alan Lee Rath at First Baptist Church in Dunkerton. They dairy farmed northwest of Dunkerton. Lois Jean mowed the yard, tended the calves, drove tractor, and cooked meals for her family. She enjoyed attending her children's activities at Community Lutheran School and volunteering there. She was a member of Emmanuel Lutheran Church of Klinger, where she was in ladies' aid. She enjoyed spending her time with her grandkids, music, reading, writing, going on rides with Alan, and taking walks to look for wildflowers. Her favorite hobby was the prairie patch on their farm and nature photography. Survivors are her husband, Alan of Dunkerton, four children, Alan Ott of Altoona, married to Dale, Daniel Rath of Eldridge, married to Jennifer, Rachel Colton Rath of Peoria, Illinois, and Michael Rath of Waterloo, married to Kylie. Also seven grandchildren, Avery, Elise, and Luke Oddie, Briley, Mason, and Clara Rath, Gideon Rath, two sisters, Cheryl Moore of Cedar Rapids, and Eileen Don Miller of Waterloo, brother Earl Canfield of Dunkerton, in-laws Dean Rath of Viroqua, Wisconsin, Kent Rath of Whitehall, Montana, David Rath of Creston, Jonathan Rath of Dunkerton, and Joel Rath of Waterloo, and numerous nieces and nephews. She was preceded in death by her parents and her father-in-law and mother-in-law. Funeral services will be held on Monday, June 13, 2022 at 11 a.m. at Emmanuel Lutheran Church, Klinger, rural Redland, with Pastor Phil Gerardin officiating. Burial will follow in the church cemetery. Visitation will be held on Sunday from 2 p.m. until 4 p.m. at the Kaiser Corson Funeral Home in Redland. Memorials may be directed to either Emmanuel Lutheran Church or Community Lutheran School. Kaiser Corson Funeral Home of Redland is assisting the Rath family with funeral arrangements and can be reached at 319-279-3551. Our last obituary of the day, Jerry Dennis Nash, March 21st, 1964 through June 1st, 2022. Jerry Dennis Nash, known by friends and loved ones as Cash of Waterloo, Iowa, departed this life on Wednesday, June 1st at Grundy Care Center. Jerry was born March 21, 1964 in Iowa City to his mother, Mary Banks, and Eddie Denton, who took on the role as his father. Jerry was a family man and he loved his family and friends. He had a contagious smile that lit up a room and never had a bad thing to say about anyone. Hometown hero is a title he definitely earned. survived by his wife Linda, parents Mary and Eddie Denton Jr., five daughters, Kyra Rackley Nash of New York, Jera Nash, Asia Nash, and Ebony Cook, all of Waterloo, and Manisha Ford of Dallas, Texas. Two sons, Jaron Nash of Des Moines, Iowa, and Leighton Nash of Waterloo. Siblings, Michael Denton Sr., Dwayne Nash of Waterloo, Wayne Denton of Sierra Vista, Arizona, Leighton Nash of Ingalls, Indiana, Nichelle Nash, Maisha Nash, Yvette Denton, and Kathy Edward, all of Waterloo, and Chantel Cage of Dallas, Texas. Nine grandchildren, two godsons, a special uncle and aunt, Sonny and Lou Bertha Green, and a host of nieces, nephews, cousins, and friends. He was preceded in death by his daughter, Danae Nash, grandparents, Archie and Luvena Banks, and Eddie and Dora Denton, a cousin, John Wayne Phillips, and a nephew, Gregory Kent Walker Jr. Condolences may be directed to the family at 3054 Angeles Drive, Waterloo, Iowa, 50703. Services will be held 11 a.m. Saturday, June 11th at Antioch Baptist Church with burial in Fairview Cemetery. Friends may call at Pilgrim Rest Baptist Church on Friday from 5 to 7 p.m. and on Saturday, 1 hour before service time at Antioch. Sanders Funeral Service is assisting the family. Now on to some other news from the region, from the Iowa Nation section. Iowa House members seek $100 million for projects. Earmarks are for infrastructure, housing, workforce, childcare. By James Q. Lynch, Cedar Rapids, State Line Cedar Rapids. $1 million for the University of Iowa Flood Center to install flood monitoring hydrologic stations in 28 eastern and southeastern counties. Another $2.5 million to complete the Forever Green Road corridor in Johnson County. $7 million for improvements at the Eastern Iowa Airport. And the same for Fayette County to use soybean-based polymer technologies developed at Iowa State University to improve several miles of rural roads. These funding requests for fiscal 2023 are among the nearly $100 million sought by Iowa members of Congress through what was once known as earmarks. That process, often associated with unjustified pork barrel spending, returned in 2021 after a 10-year ban and was renamed Community Project Funding. It's a way for the federal government to meet the urgent needs of communities, House Appropriations Committee Chair Rosa DeLauro, a Connecticut Democrat, said in a letter to colleagues. Members may submit up to 15 requests, up from 10 last year. DeLauro has instituted transparency guidelines and requires requests include evidence of community support. Northeast Iowa U.S. Rep. Ashley Hinson, a Republican who sits on the Appropriations Committee, requested funding for neighborhood revitalization in Waterloo, emergency services facilities in Gilbertville and Independence, and flood mitigation projects in Cedar Rapids and Gutenberg, among other requests. Her goal in asking for community project funding is to bring as many targeted resources into the district where they will have the most transformational impact. She seeks funding only for projects that have community buy-in and support, Hinson said this week. Her fiscal 2022 requests were for targeted infrastructure investments, including Tower Terrace Road in Linn County and a new fire station in Northeast Iowa's Protovin, as well as a Winnishek County Child Care Center. These investments are going to make a huge investment and change in the community, she said. The requests also reflect what she says she hears in the community meetings around the district. Housing, neighborhood revitalization, safety and security, and workforce, Hinson said, pointing to the applications she has made for the Hawkeye and Kirkwood community colleges. Referring to her previous career in television news, Hinson said that as someone who has been out there, knee-deep in dirty water, covering floods, she said she knows that investing in Linn County flood mitigation and the UI Flood Center will pay dividends to taxpayers, communities, businesses, and homeowners. In Southeast Iowa, Republican Representative Marionette Miller Meeks is seeking funding for healthcare facilities in Van Buren County and Muscatine, several road improvements, including Middle Road in Bettendorf, and an upgrade at the National Cemetery in Keokuk. She joined Hinson in asking for $1 million for the UI Flood Center because having both members submit requests will hopefully increase the likelihood of receiving the necessary funding, according to her office. I will always fight to ensure that Iowans' hard-earned tax dollars come back to our state, Miller Meeks said. Third District Democratic Representative Cindy Axne asked for money for a child care center, replacing emergency service radio equipment, an economic development incubator, and several infrastructure projects, including improvements at the Des Moines Airport. She did not respond to a request for comment. Iowa 4th District Republican U.S. Representative Randy Feenstra, as he did last year, did not seek any earmarks for fiscal 2023. As a strong fiscal conservative, Congressman Feenstra does not support wasteful spending that fuels inflation and adds to our crippling $30 trillion deficit, said his spokesman Billy First. Following Senate GOP caucus rules banning earmarks, neither Senator Chuck Grassley nor Senator Joni Ernst requested community project funding. Hinson, who will be going through the budget markup process with her fellow Appropriations Committee members in the coming weeks, agreed that project funding requests will be vetted. The return on investment for taxpayers is critical in my mind, she said. We're looking to make true investments where they will pay dividends. Among the earmarked funding requested by Hinson, $1 million for Iowa Heartland Habitat for Humanity's targeted neighborhood revitalization in the Church Row and Walnut neighborhoods in Waterloo, $500,000 to construct a new emergency services building in Gilbertville, $1.1 million to create a smart automation certification alliance center apprenticeship hub at Hawkeye Community College, $245,000 for construction and renovation of the Buchanan County Emergency Management Operations Center in Independence, and $7 million to Fayette County to rehabilitate several miles of rural roads with materials sourced from soybeans rather than petroleum polymers. Our next story, Finkenauer Offers Few Hints of Her Future, by James Q. Lynch and Aaron Murphy, Dateline Cedar Rapids. Abby Finkenauer did not shed any light on her future, political or otherwise, after her defeat in Tuesday's U.S. Senate Democratic primary. When addressing supporters who gathered to watch the election results Tuesday night, the former congresswoman and state lawmaker from Cedar Rapids did not speak to her future other than to say, "I have given as much as I have to this state, to this country, and I asked you to do the same." Finkenauer asked her supporters to step up and to get up when knocked down. "That is who we are as Iowans. That is who we are as Americans," Finkenauer said. "So we need to say we're going to do everything we can as Iowa Democrats in 2022 because our state and our country and our democracy depends on it." Politics has been Finkenauer's life since her teen years as a page in Congress and the Iowa legislature. She was a volunteer coordinator for then-Senator Joe Biden's 2008 Iowa caucus campaign and received his endorsement during her congressional race. After serving one term in the U.S. House, Finkenauer lost her bid for re-election in 2020 to Republican Ashley Hinson. However, her time in public office, two terms in the Iowa House and 2 years in the U.S. House, have been the honor of my life, she said Tuesday night. When she ran for Congress, Finkenauer said the campaign was personal because she was speaking for people who had been forgotten. The Senate primary was an incredible honor because of the Iowans she met. Some of the most memorable experiences and truly why we all right here tonight must commit to do whatever we can to replace Governor Kim Reynolds, to keep U.S. Representative Cindy Axne, to take back the State House and State Senate, and to beat Chuck Grassley, Finkenauer said. We must all commit to doing everything we can for every single person on that ballot. And a story from the Nation and World section. Shooting survivor testifies. Fourth grader tells Congress, "I don't want it to happen again." By Farnoosh Amari and Kevin Frecking, Associated Press, Dateline, Washington, D.C. An 11-year-old girl who survived the mass shooting at an elementary school in Uvalde, Texas, recounted in video testimony to Congress on Wednesday how she covered herself with a dead classmate's blood to avoid being shot and just stayed quiet. Maya Cirillo, a fourth grader at Robb Elementary School, told lawmakers in a pre-recorded video that she watched a teacher get shot in the head before looking for a place to hide. "I thought he would come back, so I covered myself with blood," Maya told the House panel. I put it all over me and I just stayed quiet. She called 911 using the deceased teacher's phone and pleaded for help. 19 children and two teachers died when an 18-year-old gunman opened fire with an AR-15-style rifle inside Robb Elementary School on May 24. It was the second day lawmakers heard wrenching testimony on the nation's gun violence. On Tuesday, a Senate panel heard from the son of an 86-year-old woman killed when a gunman opened fire in a racist attack on black shoppers in Buffalo, New York on May 14th. 10 people died. In the video Wednesday, Maya's father, Miguel Cirillo, asked his daughter if she feels safe at school anymore. She shook her head no. "Why?" he asks. "I don't want it to happen again," she responds. The testimony at the House Oversight Committee came as lawmakers worked to strike a bipartisan agreement on gun safety measures. Several Republicans turned the conversation to the individuals who abuse guns and how hardening schools could help protect students. Representative Andrew Clyde, Republican of Georgia, who owns a gun store, said that one of the things he learned in his military service was that the harder the target you are, the less likely you will be engaged by the enemy. He called on schools to keep doors locked, provide a single point of entry, and a volunteer force of well-trained and armed staff in addition to a school resource officer. Also Wednesday, Attorney General Merrick Garland announced a team of 9 people to aid in a review of the law enforcement response to the elementary school shooting. And now on to some sports news. Shopsky Slam lifts West. Wayhawk 8th grader delivers 10-6 win over Kennedy Cougars by Ethan Petrick, Dateline Waterloo. The Waterloo West softball team is rolling. Hosting number 15 Cedar Rapids Kennedy Cougars, the 2020 5A state champions Tuesday, the Wahawks owned a streak of 5 consecutive victories and a 6-4 record. In the first contest, the Cougars got the better of the streaking Wahawks. Kennedy managed to hold West to just 3 hits, a double from junior Addison Wells and 2 singles by Sidney Wilson, as the Cougars won 4-0. However, in the second matchup, the Wahawks regained the stride at the plate in grand fashion. For the first 6.5 innings of action, it appeared as though the second part of the doubleheader would end the same way as the first, with a 4-0 Kennedy win. But in the bottom of the 7th, Wilson hit a solo home run to break up a no-hitter. The Wahawks stormed back with 3 more runs to tie up the contest 4-4 and send it to extra innings. After both teams scored 2 runs in the 8th, the Wahawks earned the chance to nab a walk-off win by holding the Cougars scoreless in the top of the 9th. After the bases were loaded, West 8th grader Addie Shopsky blasted a deep shot over the fence for a game-winning grand slam as the Wahawks earned their 6th victory in 7 games, 10-6, to improve to a record of 7-5 on the season. In addition to Shopsky's heroics, Wilson also put on big performances at the plate during the doubleheader, going 4-for-6 with the double and a home run. Shopsky and Wilson also each scored 3 times. Cedar Falls drops 2 to Lynn Mar. The Tigers lost both games of a home doubleheader to Lynn Mar on Tuesday. The Lions scored 1 run in the top of the 1st and 2 runs in both the fourth and 6th innings to defeat the Tigers 5-0 in the first matchup. Cedar Falls responded in the second game with 2 runs in the bottom of the 1st inning to take a 2-0 lead. The Tigers' lead would last until the 7th inning when the Lions managed to score 4 runs. Cedar Falls could not mount a comeback as Lynn Mar escaped with a 4-2 victory. Senior Syrah Rasmussen pitched 8.2 innings for the Tigers, allowed 5 earned runs, and recorded 8 strikeouts. Our final sports story of the day is on college football. UNI lands Lewis Central quarterback. Camrad leads Titans to 4A state title. By Ethan Petrick, Dateline Council Bluffs. UNI got its guy. Between 7-on-7 and baseball competitions, Lewis Central quarterback Braylon Camrad found time to announce his commitment to the Panthers on Tuesday. Camrad said the biggest factor in his decision to commit to UNI is the belief the coaching staff in Cedar Falls has in him. "The coaching staff and the people around that area, just their ability to believe in me," Braylon said. "Through this recruiting process, it really felt like the right place for me." A member of the 2023 recruiting class, the senior-to-be from Council Bluffs provides a skill set with tantalizing upside. In his first full season as a starting quarterback, Camred left little doubt about his arm talent, throwing for 2,506 yards, 25 touchdowns, to only 4 interceptions, and completing 61.9% of his throws. But that ability through the air only shows half of his repertoire. As a member of the Titans' recent state champion 4x200-meter relay team, Braylon has the ability to make defenses pay with his feet. During his junior season, he added 358 yards and 11 scores on the ground. Braylon said that he expects his expansive skills to be the biggest asset he brings to the UNI football program. My natural arm talent, my IQ, knowing where to put the football, being able to read the defense, and also, if things start to break down, being able to take off and run, Braylon said. Being able to cause fits for defenses, being able to throw the ball over the top, and if needed to, run the football and extend plays. So being able to do both things is very beneficial. I can bring that to the table at UNI. His on-field ability is also alluded to in how Lewis Central head football coach and Braylon's father, Justin Camrad, describes his starting quarterback and what he allowed the Titans to do. Our entire playbook is wide open, from the quick passing game to the intermediate to the long ball, Justin said. He has been playing quarterback since he was 8 years old. His ability to understand offenses, understand defenses, and make the right read and be able to protect the football, I am totally confident in his abilities as a quarterback. In addition to his physical attributes, Justin said, Braylon routinely demonstrates leadership and drive to continually improve. He is going to compete his butt off to get playing time there, Justin said. You talk about leadership ability, it is already developing. But he always does a great job for us and led us to a state championship last year. Really works his tail off. Justin added that he feels another asset Braylon, as a multi-sport athlete, provides is his approach as a competitor. As a quarterback, the biggest thing is that competitive experience, Justin said. On the football field, on the wrestling mat, and a state champion in track, just going to bring a competitor to the football team. A kid that is a multi-sport athlete that does a lot of good things. He is going to bring that level of competitiveness to UNI. He said he preached a message of competitiveness to all 4 of the Camrad boys in order to prepare them for participation in sports at the next level. Something that has been ingrained in him is that you go there, that is the best of the best, Justin said. It is going to be super competitive, and you have to go in there with an open mind and understand that there are going to be some guys that are better, but you have to outwork them. Regardless of what sport you are in, you always have to be outworking your opponent. The elder Camrad is the right man to impart this wisdom on his sons. He played running back at the University of Nebraska Omaha from 2000 to 2003. The biggest thing is you go down this journey of wanting to play college football, Justin said. Understanding the landscape, the time commitment that is going to be asked of you, you really have to love the game of football. You have to have a passion for it. According to the Future Panther, Braylon said being able to learn from his father has been a huge factor in his athletic development. It really helps a lot getting advice from him, Braylon said. Things that I can do, things I need to work on to become the best athlete that I can be, and really get myself out there. However, Braylon has been able to study and learn from more than just his father. In recent memory, Lewis Central produced current Texas Christian quarterback, former 4-star Max Dugan, and former South Dakota starter Austin Simmons. Seeing those guys around, studying them, and watching how they approach the game is something that is invaluable, Justin said. There are many other talented individuals around our program that have really set the standard for what that work ethic needs to be like. For him, he has seen 2 really high-caliber quarterbacks and been surrounded by many other talented individuals. Braylon added that beyond their approach, the 2 former Titans motivated him to chase his childhood goal. 2 people I really look up to, Braylon said. They really inspired me to become like them and work hard and go chase after my dreams. And finally, the 5-day weather forecast for the Cedar Valley. Today, expect some sun, then clouds. Windy, light wind, northwest, 4 to 8 miles per hour, and a high of 79. Tonight, rain and a thunderstorm. Light winds, 3 to 6 miles per hour out of the northwest, and a low of 58. On Friday, we'll see a shower and thunderstorms with winds out of the northwest at 4 to 8 miles per hour, high of 77, low of 59. On Saturday, A few showers in the area with winds out of the southwest at 8 to 16 miles an hour. We'll see a high of 81 and a low of 62 on Saturday. On Sunday, it turns a little rainier, a few showers with winds out of the west at 6 to 12 miles per hour, a high of 81 and a low of 64. And on Monday, expect a windy day, southeast winds at 10 to 20 miles per hour with a high of 80 and a low of 67. And that does it for today's reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Thursday, June 9th, 2022. I'm your reader, Seth Anderson. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. Thanks for listening.